time to talk FC Dallas. If we had done this show 48 hours ago, it would have been different. 86 hours ago, it would have been different. A week ago, 2 weeks ago. It has been arguably the most hectic offseason of any team in MLS. That wasn't 100% what we anticipated. Tom, it's not far off, right? They let their manager go. They had an interim. We thought there would be some moving pieces in this offseason. It's gone off plan and yet somehow has come back on plan all at the same time.
Yes, so this was a team that was connected to me by sources around the league for Lucho Acosta. When Estudiantes bid for Lucho Acosta, I was told that number was somewhere like 10 million range, which is a lot for a 31-year-old, right? Like, again, we all love Lucho Acosta. That's not quite the market value rate. Dallas loved Lucho Acosta, but it was like, hey, man, like, if you got 10 million, good deal. We're not coming close to that. Let's not waste our time. I'm not going to waste your time. And then when it was, you know, there's questions being asked about that group, the Foster Gillette group of everybody, like, it's like, hey, no. Like, you don't need to bid $10 million to get this done. Like, and Lucho would want to go there if we can work this out. Like, talk to Cincinnati again. And they get this deal done for $5 million plus $1 million add-ons. I think it's a fair price for Cincy. Dallas is a no-brainer. They have struggled to kind of get to the next level, and they kind of took a step back when we thought they were going to take a step forward. Alan Velasco is a surprising a transfer abroad for $10 million to Boca Juniors. They've revamped their defense, right? They brought in Osaze Ughaghide. Again, I can't be pronouncing that right, but nailed I'm doing it. My best out here. That's all you can ask. Lucho Acosta, Peter Musa. I don't care if you put Tom Bogan and David Goss on the other wings. That front two is going to score a ton of goals. You don't even need a third and a fourth guy. So I'm extremely excited to watch this team play in 2025. And like you said, Goss, a week ago, I was like, woof. This team looks rough. Since then, they brought in a $3.5 million center back and Lucho Acosta and a couple other, like, center back depth.
Mm-hmm.
A few other signings. This is a team that you could be pretty pessimistic about it a week and a half ago. Right now, I got a lot of optimism.
Yeah, they're one solid piece away, I think, from really inserting themselves towards the top of the Western Conference conversation. And they're in a good spot in which that piece could be at a few different positions.
Yeah.
And like now that they've got Lucho done and they know that, now you think, okay, they can go out and be aggressive. Maybe I'm a little surprised they're not in the Josh Atencio conversation, but maybe they don't want to spend U22 spots and capital on a different young player when they want to be promoting from their own academy.
They could be a Hassani Dotson team too.
Interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. It's not the solve for everything, but if he comes at the right, if they can get the right deal because they're the only one in the market, then it's worth doing it, and then maybe there's still space to make another move or two. Am I playing on the left or the right?
Wherever you want, guys.
Because if I'm playing on the right, you know Lucho's going to set the ball up clean for me. I'm hitting a first-time cross every time I touch the ball, whether it's trying to wrap it around the back line for Musa, or it's that early open foot ball for Musa to get on the end of. I'm hitting that every time. If I'm playing on the left, I have no left foot. So I'm coming in on the right, and I'm trying to hit a slide rule through ball for Musa to cut across or Lucha to cut across. I just want you to know that now.
But why haven't you talked about lobbing the ball to the back post for 5'7" on athletic Tom Bogert? Where did that not fit in the equation there?
I would take Tom's determination not to let me down on the far post over 80% of Major League Soccer players and what they're doing anyway. I'm hoping Dallas is back. When Dallas has been good the last few years, the stadium has been filled. Post the construction on the American Soccer Hall of Fame, it's been a cool atmosphere. If you are in the area, that's a must attend. I've been a couple times. I have a great time there all the time. I wouldn't choose to be in Texas because I'm from New York and it's like the antithesis of everything I would do. But when I'm there, I enjoy going to an FC Dallas game and being around Toyota Stadium as well. Hopefully again this year, it'll be a must attend. We've already talked Buzz Carrick a ton on this show. He was the one who published the story about the unknown FC Dallas player who played a game or two on your Division III college soccer team all the way back in the day. And now we get a chance to have him on himself. If you don't already follow Third Degree, I don't know what you're doing. They're the best covering soccer in the Texas area, in Dallas specifically, and they're covering so many teams now. North Texas, of course, a Super League team on the USL women's side, a couple of USL men's team apparently coming in to the scene, and then like it is such a strong lower division scene in Texas with having these NPSL and UPSL teams and all the other things as well. So follow them, and let's go to our segment with Buzz right now. Well, we're recording right now on February 14th, and it has been a long 2025 for FC Dallas fans. And we are barely into the year, but it is time to dig into this Texas club that has had arguably the most eventful offseason of anyone, and there's no one else to do it with than Buzz Carrick of the Third Degree Podcast, Third Degree Net, as well for all your Dallas coverage across, what now, Super League, MLS Next Pro, MLS, college, everything going on.
Yeah, we're on our way to 7 or 8 professional teams here in Dallas. So we're getting stretched pretty thin, but we're trying to do our best to keep everybody covered up.
It is, there's now the new USL team as well, which is like in Plano, Texas, right next to
It's in Garland, which is, you know, within like a 30-mile distance of FC Dallas. And there's also some behind-the-scenes discussion of a USL team coming to Fort Worth. And we have 3 or 4, you know, USL 2 PDL teams. And, you know, and one of them is launching a women's WPSL team. So it's just piling on more and more as people try and get in on soccer. Well, before the World Cup.
Yeah, we do know that the population is there, so the potential for it to succeed, it would odd. It seems odd to me to make the decision to pick the exact same suburb as the one that already exists, but let's talk about the one that already exists, and it has been all over the map. We have been waiting for the dominoes to fall so we could do our Cincinnati and Portland and Dallas previews, and finally it feels like someone pushed that first domino and the rest went with it. We like to do our transfer updates right out the gate, and then we'll get into our big storylines. We'll play a clip from Doyle, his thoughts on the team. I've been calling them our Doyleisms, and then we've got an over underline to close things with Andrew Wiebe. There has been so much happening that I kind of forgot about one of the record sales in MLS that started the off season, which is Alan Velasco being sold to Boca Juniors for up to $12 million. He was supposed to be the center of this team because Jesus Ferreira and Paul Arriola were traded to Seattle right before that. It is a long list of pretty big names going out the door at FC Dallas. And Kosi Tafari traded to LAFC. Sam Junkwa traded to RSL, and then allowing some starters like Asier Iremendi, Juan, Eugene Ansa, Liam Frazier, and Ima Tumwasi to walk out the door. So the rebuild is on. It was probably stretched a little faster because of the sale of Alan Velasco. Let's go back into some of these moments. What have you made of this offseason as it's gone? And I guess how surprised were you with the magnitude of the moves?
Well, not surprised at all. The Hunts have long had a making the playoffs is sort of a minimum requirement here. And we all know the value of DPs or U22 initiatives, the high caliber, high end players that eat up, that use these mechanics to get big salaries under cheap ways. And when you're not good, the best way, the fastest way to change is to vacate those spots and get new players in. They planned to try and move Jesus and wanted to move Jesus for over a year, maybe even going all the way back to the World Cup when he and his people expected a bounce off the World Cup, which didn't happen, of course. You know, when you have a player of his caliber who has been declining in productivity through various injuries or whatever it is that wants out, and you're trying to rebuild your team, you got to start with that. So they needed to vacate that DP spot and make him happy and give themselves an opportunity to do some things. And the same thing's true with Paul Arriola. That massive contract was an albatross at that $1.7 million because of the buy-down that it required. So I wrote back in October that both those contracts needed to be out. So not a surprise at all. The one that's a surprise was, as you said, Alan Velasco. Nobody expected that. The club had been dealing with these Boca rumors or these River rumors for years. And so they gave him this new contract expecting that to squash that. And instead, it was like throwing gas on the fire because Boca was like, oh, so you do value him. Here's $12 million. And at that point, $12 million for Velasco is ridiculous. That's, you cannot pass that up. You know, a young, interesting, exciting player, but the pure goal and assist productivity was never there. And he's coming off an ACL. Yep. So that's a no-brainer, but caught them off guard. So that was not part of the rebuild plan. He was going to move inside and be the 10 in this new system. So now you're scrambling. And they got, in a sense, a little bit lucky that here comes this new rule that you can buy a player inside the league. And we all know the risk factor of a foreign signing versus a known commodity inside the league, domestic. You know exactly what you're getting. You know the productivity is there, particularly from Lucho Acosta, who's been in the league for quite a while for various teams and done it. Has a green card. You know, it's a no-brainer deal. Now, it's been reported by a lot of people, not me, but that they put in $12 million on Evander. They obviously did not win that. They probably obviously would have liked that better. But Lucio Acosta is an amazing fit. It's a perfect linchpin for this next 3-4 season cycle under Quill, and you can build the whole thing around him. And his numbers replace Paul Velasco and Jesus combined, he replaces them just alone on his numbers, purely goals and assists. So you have to feel really good about the offense being at least the same as last year.
Yep.
Unfortunately, that's only half the problem.
And
or
it goes,
maybe not even half.
Yeah, it goes to the magnitude of the moves. I just want to talk for a moment about Jesus Ferreira, because I think with Dallas, and you know as well as anyone, right, they became this youth factory, and they had this incredible talent. I've said it a couple times. I think unfortunately, but fortunately for them, I think it was a bit of a golden generation. Not everyone is going to be Ricardo Pepi and Brian Reynolds and Paxton Pomykal and all of that. Jesus Ferreira was then put in an interesting spot where they turned him into the DP, and it felt like he was going to be the one to stay for a little while and then become a huge move that probably covers a couple years of maybe not as many moves to then get the next generation ready to push through and start to sell consistently. And this is not how the plan was, to trade him inside the league, to get him off a DP contract to potentially a rival in Seattle. Just like, how do you see how this has all gone down and how maybe it will affect the way Dallas operates going forward?
Well, I think you might be right that we might have been looking at between 99 to 03, which is, you know, basically Paxton to Pepi. That might end up being a golden generation. It's very possible. It's also true that everybody else has gotten better. Like Dallas was an early arrival in the idea that the academy would work. So they've doubled down after the Nico Estevez, I hate kids sort of era, which is not quite fair, but you know what I mean? North Texas wins a championship because he pushes all the kids down, and there's no longer this playing up happening, cascading effect. Well, they're now doubling back down to that. They signed 6 home runs in one day, so they're back to that idea. The depth here is back to being kids, which is the way it should be for this club. That's their identity. That's their DNA. That's the way they can compete in the league, is by having these kind of things. So there will be more guys to come. Again, you might be right about the golden generation, but as for Jesus, you know, he often talked here about wanting to, you know, live, it was in his dad's shadow. He's been here since he was 9 years old, and he wanted to sort of outdo his dad in terms of FC Dallasdom. But when you've been here that long, at some point you're just like, I need to try. I mean, I eventually need to do something else. I've been here a long time. He kind of was getting to the, it was like, it's not happening here. I need to kind of go. And he's long wanted to go to Europe eventually, you know, so he didn't quite get the outdo my dad bit here. But at the same time, like they had the Russia $12 million offer that got nixed by MLS. And then the window after that, they had a $3 million offer to the Spanish team, Las Palmas, that fell apart because they didn't get money into the last second. So Jesus for like a year is like, I'm going. Right. And then now he didn't. So now he's like, oh my God. So he needed a greener pasture and to sort of refresh himself, because post, not even the World Cup, post Gold Cup, he had sort of, you know, faded, and he's been dealing with some things, and he just needs to go somewhere where he's not have the weight of his name and the world on him. And it turned out that MLS is the best situation for that. I think the deal is a little undervalued for him, but you're stuck with the mechanics of the league. Some of my perceived value will be what Leo Chu is. If Leo Chu is 2023 Leo Chu, maybe we're excited. If he's 2024 Leo Chu, then that's not a good return.
Yeah.
If Zanata can do his businessy selly thing and turn that into a couple mil or something to Brazil or whatever, then now we feel a lot better about the money. But in the meantime, it's a case where I think everybody was ready. They were ready. The team was ready. It was just time.
Yep. We saw with Kellen Acosta, and I think it worked in the long run, moving him inside the league. He got more successful, and then Dallas can try and turn those assets into more talent or money or whatever it is down the road. I'm excited to watch Jesus in Seattle. And as you said, it felt like it was probably time. Let's go to Lucho now. Lucho burned down the bridge behind him to leave Cincinnati. Now he lands in Dallas. And I asked Tom on our show last week before this happened, but as the rumors got heavy of like, I'm looking at a depth chart and you throw Lucho in and I'm interested already. How quickly does it take for him? What do you make of what he's going to be and sort of what this team can be around him?
The big part with him will obviously be buy-in. Like he ran into a little bit of, kerfuffle at the end of his DC United days too. So, but again, like Zanotta, I should get that pronunciation 100% right, says that, he's dealt with these kinds of players before. He was there when he sold Neymar and things like that. So, you know, this is not a guy that he's unused to. Some of the questions will be how will Quill handle him. But I think Quill has a lot of respect for a player like this. This is a guy who you know can deliver. It's not a question. It's just, as long as he buys in, and they talked a lot about a Zoom call they had with him on Super Bowl Sunday, where they were like, the buy-in is here. He's excited. We're excited. Everybody's selling each other on the project. And so, okay, that's great. Let's go. Obviously, when you have a guy like Petter Moose in front of you, for a guy like Lucho Acosta, that's probably very exciting. I mean, that's a big-time goal-scoring goal, you know, slightly above his XG, but, you know, that's the kind of guy who, you know, the post-shot XG is even better. So, like, you know that if you get to the ball, him in a good spot, he's putting it in. You know, some of the other wings are a little bit more of a question, but there's some exciting pieces there. You know, it's a double pivot behind him, so he doesn't have to play a lot of defense, even though that's one of the big questions. Is there ain't a six around here? It's a whole bunch of eights.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. But, you know, in the end of the day, it's like if he buys into what Eric is selling and what they're trying to do tactically, I think it's going to be a perfect piece, the perfect kind of piece to have the whole offense, you know, rotating around him and flowing past him and through him. And that's really exciting for fans because Quill's going to play a very open offensive attacking game. You're going to see higher scoring games. You're not going to see 1-0. You're going to see 4-3. You know, it's going to be open on both ends. So we'll see how it goes. But I think everyone is so excited about that. You have a linchpin guy that's going to be in the conversation with Mauro Diaz or David Ferreira as the best tens that ever played here.
Yep. His worst year in Cincinnati was 17 goal contributions, 7 goals, 10 assists. Otherwise, he's pretty much blown that out of the water. 29, 31, and 34 goals and assists combined. I imagine he's going to start the year playing pissed off, and that's like an ideal situation for Dallas fans. Whatever happened in Cincinnati, whatever happened in D.C., it takes a little while to get there. So 2025 is probably not the concern or not the issue. And as you said, it is as fortunate as you could get to replace Areola, Velasco, and Jesus with this one piece. And he's been durable. He's been healthy. He's been consistent. He knows the league. He knows a ton of the responsibility. He is, along with a few other pieces, a ton of additions for this team. You mentioned Leo Chu, who came in the trade. Anderson Julio as well came in a trade as an option along the front three. Shaq Moore comes back to Dallas in a trade from Nashville that it just never really worked out for him there, but partially that was on the transfer fee that they paid for him, and now he sort of fits the proper role of he's a consistent right back, maybe not a game changer. And then two big signings at center back that just happened. I'm going to go Alvaro Augusto, and I'm not sure how to pronounce Osazi Oragide.
Very good.
There we go. 24-year-old center back from Amiens and a 19-year-old center back from Porto Mayense. How real are these pieces you think Dallas expects for 2025?
Well, that's the big question because the defense was the stated thing that had to be fixed. Way too many goals against last year, and I don't know if today you can say the defense is any better.
Yeah.
Because Shaq Moore is an upgrade, but he's an offensive upgrade. Is he a defensive upgrade over what they had there? I don't really think so. Marco Farfán is what he is. Sebastian Ibiaga is still a lock starter here, who's your miles may vary on what that is worth. Nkosi Tafari, I thought was better, but they couldn't handle him, so he's gone. Abubakar is definitely falling off and should not be a starter anymore. So now you're looking at, like, is a 24-year-old kid legit? And I looked at the highlight clips, and there's power, there's size, there's strength, very aggressive. He hits hard, like, recovery speed, like, lots of good things there. But I also just described Nkosi Tafari. So you jettisoned a guy and got the exact same guy. Well, hopefully this guy's actually better at 24. You know, he's not going to peak for 3 or 4 years as a center back because they peak even later than your normal player. So the idea is to build with that guy for a couple of seasons, yet you still expect him to walk in and start. The other kid, Augusta, is a fun story because Dallas went to Portugal short bodies. And so they called up some local team and said, hey, send us 3 players. I need a 6, a left back, and a center back. And they sent them 3 kids. And the center back, they were like, oh, this kid's 6'3 and Portuguese Brazilian, 19 years old. So they kept him for the whole camp, and he played in a couple of scrimmages, and they're like, you know what, we're buying him. So they bought him on a discount, but he's 19. This is the fifth center back on the roster. He's going to need lots of North Texas time. This is not a guy you should think about. I mean, if he's playing, then we got real problems if he's playing this season. This is just almost like a homegrown in the sense of like where you have to think of him. Because they just found he was playing for a second division Portuguese team's U23 team So not even their first team, their U23 team. That's how raw and off the radar he was. But, you know, when you find a kid, whatever, it costs you, I don't know, 100 grand or something. So they went for it, and that's fine. But that's not a player to worry about.
He plays at Puerto Mayente, and that's where he was playing. I've actually been to a game there when I was on vacation. It's in the Algarve. It's, like, the only team not in one of the two big cities in the Portugal area. So, credit to Dallas for picking a really cool place to go on vacation and do the preseason. And I'll talk Porto Mayense one day when I see Alvaro Augusto at an MLS All-Star game.
The exciting thing about him is that he has played a little six. So maybe we think, oh, the feet might be all good. So that's kind of cool if you don't know him, seen him. So
a bunch of question marks on the field.
Yep.
I want to start on Eric Quill off the field, though. Like, you've been around him because he's been a Dallas guy, North Texas championship manager, took the number two job in Columbus to get into the MLS ranks, and then the head coach at New Mexico, where he had good regular season success, not the postseason success. Either way, I think people would say he was one of the best managers in USL last year. What is he like? What is his personality? What should Dallas fans expect?
Sure.
What's his interactions like around the team?
Well, he even played here, too. So he knew 100% what he was getting into and buying into, and he wanted to be here, which is key. And I predicted back in April that he would be the coach, even before they fired Nico, that he was going to be the coach this year. So part of the question is, like, the Hunt's tradition of hiring, like, Nico's the first guy they've hired that wasn't Nico Stevez, that wasn't part of their tree and their pathway of coaching.
Yeah.
Obviously, they didn't feel good about how that went, so they're going back to that idea. And the second thing is the buy-in, like the fact that he wanted this gig when he didn't get it against Nico Stevez. He, as you said, went to Columbus to improve his resume. So what is he like? As a player, he was an extraordinary athlete, really fast, but also technical enough that he got recruited by Ajax when he was in high school. And this was way back before in the earliest days of MLS. So the parents aren't on board with that. And so he stays and goes to Clemson, and he's like a Project 40 guy, U.S. Youth International, that stuff. So he's a real admirer of the combination of what probably is considered very American, both size, power, and skill. So, like, not going to be ticky-tacky Barcelona 2-point whatever. This is going to be verticality, pace, athleticism, power, and skill. He's the one who made Bernie Camungo be Bernie Camungo when he was here.
Yeah.
So, like, also was involved in the progression of Ricardo Pepi, Tanner Tessman, Jonathan Gomez, for people don't know who Jogo is, you know, was involved with getting these guys through the team. Almost always plays a 4-2-3-1 variation of some kind or another. Wants to be aggressive defensively in moments, like press triggers, but not going to chase you all over the field and wear you out. The team will probably mostly look like Oscar Pereja's teams, where they'll be patient, but once they get it, it's on. It's a track meet, and we're going fast at you and coming at you vertically. Also with some skill. So as a person, he is very, very demanding of fitness. They've done a bunch of fitness work, demanding of effort, demanding of focus, no lollygagging around. He will call you out in public, in your face, in front of your team if you're not up for it. He's also the guy that a minute later is then arm around the guy, patting on the shoulder. People seem to love to play for him because he is not just lollygagging it around. He's got intent. He's got purpose. And most importantly for me, I think, and the thing that I think was really what separates him is that he has won things. You know, he won a DA championship with Chris Richards and Chris Kappas, and then recognizes that that talent has exceeded what he has, and then hands them to FC Dallas.
Mm.
You know, recognizes the importance of that progression. Picked Chris Richards when Luchi Gonzalez had passed on him. So recognizes young talent, wants to play young talent, wins an USL 1 championship playing a 15, 16-year-old at left back, an 18-year-old at right back. So will play kids and has won those things. If he'd have stuck with New Mexico, I think he would have won something there eventually.
You know?
So to me, like, you can talk about a lot of dudes that would have fit the profile here. And that's one thing that I particularly like is, like, it is hard to win. And a guy that even though it hasn't been MLS, it's been like a couple of steps along the way. He knows what it takes to win things. And I think that even if he doesn't have the money here behind him that a Seattle or an LAFC or a Toronto, even though it hasn't worked out, or Miami has, you know, he recognizes how this team can win, which is what he did with North Texas. So it's a really good fit in that regard.
It's going to be an interesting season. I am excited to see him get the opportunity. It's sort of what we're hoping for, of, like, let young coaches get their, you know, get their feet wet, and then give them the opportunity, and don't just panic and say, well, we need someone who has a resume so that we have cover for ourselves if it doesn't go well and all those other things. As well as, I think part of my conversation around the golden generation with Dallas is, I think Oscar Pereja and Lucci Gonzalez and Eric Quill and so many other pieces around this were so key to the recruitment. And I think they've maybe taken steps back. And part of that is Austin and Houston coming on the scene. Part of that is, as you said, everyone else getting better. But I think an Eric Quill helps Dallas maybe reset themselves and say, like, no, we're going to go back to what worked for, with us, and we're going to be able to convince the best young players to come here.
Yeah, you can go back. We can talk for hours about what has happened to the FC Dallas Academy. But you lose guys like Lucian Gonzalez is not back there. Great talker, teacher, educator, yeah. Charismatic. Javier Morales was here at the time. Peter Luxon was an academy coach. The Bazan brothers were academy coaches. You know, those guys knew how to sell a product and knew how to recruit and get guys in. Like, the best guys, Alex Aldaz is now the U16 national team coach. Mikey Barris, who was in the academy at that time, who when he was with the first team, everybody thought he was just Lucci's yes man. Apparently not. Apparently that dude can coach, because now he's done well with the national teams and he's done it at San Diego. So, like, all these great academy guys that could recruit and get dudes in and develop have gone, and what's here now is what's left. And there hasn't been like a purge or a clean house, and I'm not suggesting they should just wholesale fire the staff, but they definitely took a way step back in recruitment. And to be fair to them, post COVID they have gone hard at recruiting, and now the current 18 team, there's like four kids left from 13, so they're aggressively recruiting all up and down the ranks
to revamp things.
And so the next group of, like, I mean, iStone, they missed on iStone. You know, there's Norris is a U20 guy, but is he got the next thing? And then behind them, there's a 1 or 2 years there, but then there's guys that are just, you know, some a Honduras U17, a Jamaican U17, U20. Like, there are other countries and other guys, but you're right, we're in this gap where they sold Pepe, they sold Tessman, they sold everybody.
Yeah.
And they just haven't quite the next group, which is Nolan and Tark Scott, have not come through yet. So, like, is it the golden generation? Yeah. I mean, probably not, but, you know, there's going to be some stuff there. It just won't be like what else.
Yeah. For cup competitions, just the one U.S. Open Cup because of the struggles last year, but it does allow the club to focus a little bit. Let's get into our Doyleism, and then we'll bounce off the back of that.
I mean, anytime you can get an MVP caliber playmaker who's in his prime, you've probably had a pretty decent offseason. I don't think any of this went in the direction according to any sort of plan that Dallas had beforehand, but they've done so well in the transfer market, moving players on at a profit, that they were able to go out and get Lucho Acosta when it was clear he did not want to return to FC Cincinnati. And Lucho Acosta is an MVP caliber player. He was the first half of the season. He was the entirety of the 2023 season. So that should make them better. The other thing I like about this is that Eric Quill, the new head coach, has preferred a pretty vanilla 4-2-3-1, and that's not derogatory. Like, I still think a 4-2-3-1 is the best, most flexible sort of formation for, like, 90% of MLS teams, especially ones that are built around a number 10, because it gives Lucha the chance to roam but still keep structure, like very easy banks of four. It keeps that around him, and that's when he's best. And we saw last year he roamed too much in that 3-5-2 that since he wanted to play, and it kind of broke their shape, and I don't think they're going to have that problem. And then you add a high-scoring number 9 to the mix. I have high hopes for Bernie Camungo coming in from that right wing. Like, there's suddenly a lot more fun in this team than it felt like there was going to be a month ago. At the same time, just massive questions across that back line, but especially in central defense, and some serious questions at D-mid as well. So it's hard to get out too far over your skis about this one.
So a lot of question marks there. I think interesting from Doyle of the work that Dallas has done over the last few years to set themselves up with Lucho Acosta. And a reminder for everyone, Lucho signed a new deal with FC Cincinnati, so he's locked in for 25-26 and then a team option for 2027, a little over $4 million. So Dallas has some time now to play him. Whether they sell him for something in the end or just get pure production out of him, it's all pretty strong. I think it goes into just the Open Cup with this sort of, Doyle talked about the up and down, the back line versus the attack, and what can be there. What should expectations be for this club this year?
Well, I think he's right about the 4-2-3-1. That's pretty clear. All their right backs are vertical, get forward kind of guys. And the left backs are Marco Farfán and right now probably Nolan Norris, who are not get forward aggressively kind of guys. So, like, if you're talking about a modern getting into the WM that everybody does, you know, Farfán will slide in a little and your right side will go up. And they have a couple of wings on the right. Not Bernie, but Pedrinho, Anthony Ramirez, some guys that can play like a false and slide underneath. If they use Logan Farrington in that capacity, he does the same thing. We have seen that at adaptation. So you can look for the right side overlap if you want some of that more tactical kind of flux forward kind of bit. He's totally right about the lack of a six. At this point, everybody on the roster is like a more of a 6'8" guy or a pure eight like Legette. I mean, right now they're using almost 2 8-10s in Legette and Seeking Sebeling because that's all they have available because Ramiro's been hurt. Shel Capamano's been sick and is still not training with the team again. He's only training on the side. They let Yarmendi go. So there's a massive hole. Other than Nolan Norris, there's only real six they have on the team. Yeah. We're real excited about Diego Garcia and like what he's going to bring to the table, but he's an eight. He's not a six either. So spot on about that analysis of the big questions about the defense are related, and of course, to all those bodies. And I don't know that you can think Lucio Costa is going to immediately turn this team around and turning it into a contender. That's not that. But I think it gets him back to where they were last season, which is a scrap at the bottom end of the playoffs. I think they're probably a team that's going to fight for that 7, 8, 9 if they do nothing else. But they also have tons and tons of GAM available and two open senior roster spots if they want them, the 19th and 20th spots. So they, you know, there's still talk of getting a six. There's talk of maybe a U-22 winger. There's a talk of another center back maybe coming in. So they're not done. On the press conference on Wednesday, Dan Hunt specifically said, we're going to bring in a couple more players. And Zanata pointed out the window goes till April. So I think they're actively in the market still. Yeah. They're not finished. So you can make a call about where the team is right this minute. What they're going to get at the money they're going to get that they have left is not going to like turn you into Seattle overnight or Miami overnight, but it can make you more of a solid 5, 6, 7 firmly than it would be like right now where you're thinking maybe you're just ahead of that playoff line. You only need to drop, five or six points, maybe in goal differential, cut 5 or 6, add 5 or 6. And you're right in there from 6 to 8 in terms of the standings. Cause the West is not elite. You know, there's a lot of questions in the West. So this is the first step getting back to where they think they should be.
So we reset our line on goal differential at 55.5. I believe this is goals against. Last year was 56. Am I right about saying that? Or was this supposed to be? This is supposed to be goals against. So he's asking that question and sort of going into the center of what's been an issue. I think while you think about this one and we decide if the line's good and where we land, I think from an attacking point of view, there should be belief that it's much better this year of just, I think Camungo's going to put up numbers easily comparable to Areola or Jesus. I think Logan Farrington's going to put up some better numbers this year. I think Anderson Julio can do a job off of Lucho Acosta. Like, my expectation is this team scores at least 15 more goals than they did last year. And that is also Pedro Musa having half a year trying to figure things out and get his feet under him, and then none of the pieces around him being available from the moment he found his feet. So from an attacking point of view, I have high expectations for this club. I think they're going to be fun to watch. I think it's all going to work pretty quickly, and I think we're going to see some elevation of the game of Camungo. I think Leo Chu could be in that. I think Anderson Julio could be in that as well. From a defensive point of view, though, the question right here is, is it better or worse than last year? Last year was 56, so 55.5 goals against. What do you make of this line, and where would you fall?
I think that line is fair because I honestly think the defense right this minute is not better than last year. I think it's the same. You know, the relative value of the guy coming in versus the people, Nkosi Tafari, they jettison is relatively speaking the same, I think. French League 2 is not coming out of the Premier League or even the Championship. Like, there are questions to be asked.
Yeah.
Now, it could be the kid ends up being amazing, and then we'll all be blown away, and how awesome is that going to be? But we've talked about the other problems on defense, and not having a real dominant six. There's just too many questions. There are too many players that we don't know exactly what they're bringing to the table. We don't know how good they are. If all the ifs hit, if Chu is better, if Anderson Huda becomes a full-time legit starter, he looks great so far. If Bernie comes back, if Logan reproduces his stats off the bench, or if they make him a starter. Sebastian Legette led the team in assists last year alongside Farrington. What is his role now that Acosta is here? Now that is he going to be an eight? Right. How's he getting into the mix? You know, still a player that you'd think of at 900K plus salary ought to be a big-time player. What's going on with Paxton, a million-dollar player? if Paxton comes back midseason and all of a sudden is the Paxton of old, that's a totally different question too. So there's still, you know, Lucho Costa, we know who that is. Petter Musa, we know who that is. Everybody else is an if and a question. Yeah. And so you can't really, to make some prognosis, they're going to be this great team. I'm with you on maybe adding, you know, 10 goals compared to last year, but the defense I think is basically the same. So that's what I said, like, Quill's going to be very aggressive. You're going to see these games that are 4-3. So both those numbers could go up,
right?
You know, in terms of the grand picture. And so that's why it's about the goal difference. If you can take the goal difference from minus 2 to 10, then you're in the playoffs and you're probably like fifth.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the balance is the question. And that's where, again, there's just, it's chaos here. We joke on our podcast, Root for Chaos, like what a fun year it's going to be because it's going to be chaos because we don't know. There's so many questions that need answering going into the season.
I'm excited to tune in early on and see how it all goes. I'm going to agree with you. I think both numbers go up, so I'm going to go under on this or over on this. Sorry. I think they're going to concede more goals. I think they're going to score more goals as well. I do think they'll get a little closer to that plus number on the goal differential, and I think they will contend in that 5-9 range in that playoff conversation. One of the things that's tough to sort of figure out with teams is what would have last year been if they aren't out of it? Like, how much effort are you getting at the end of the year? What was the, you know, firing a coach bump? How bad was it at the end there? Like, if you kind of smooth all that out, was there 4 more points in this whole thing for the team? And then you're hoping even better with Lucho coming in and some other pieces around it. Either way, to follow it, you've got to follow Third Degree. Follow them on all social media. Listen to the podcast. Go to the website, thirddegree.net as well. Buzz, I appreciate you taking the time. Stoked to do this with you. I'm a big fan of everything you do. And let's do this again soon.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's been a real pleasure. I've been listening to y'all's new bits, and I love what you're doing. And you can tell Doyle that Dallas had 60 points in 2015 and 2016 back-to-back and from the last one.
He texted very sadly last night, and I responded. Yeah. He said this, if you haven't heard, in our points over-under show. He said no team had gone back-to-back 60 points and asked about Miami. He texted last night, and I responded, do we have to redo the whole hour and 56-minute show? Because the premise was flawed at the foundation of all of it. So,
right.
Yeah, I think we all got to blame Doyle for all of the problems in our life. But once again, thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you again very soon.